opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and are not representative of their employers, spouses, or associates. If you haven't gathered from the title, the language used on the show is akin to that of a high school boys' locker room. Listener discretion is advised.
The advice given in this podcast is worth what you pay for it, which is nothing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of Effed Up Farming. I'm your host, Royce O'Neill, and across from me in the crow's nest is Tyler Martin. How are you, Tyler?
I'm doing well. How's everybody else this evening?
I'm good. You want to introduce your special guest?
I will introduce my very special guest. And not just because he's special. I have my father, David Martin, in the crow's nest, ready to go.
Hello.
How are you, David?
I'm just peachy. How about yourself?
Good. Glad to have you up here.
Great to be here.
All right. Well, let's lead off with sponsors so we can get this man a drink like we promised him.
So I'll go first, and I'm going to go with Meek Club Lambs of Gageby, Texas. I don't know if you noticed this, Royce. I wore the hoodie all day today.
Impressive.
Sheep's not on the cheap.
Best people, best lambs in the business.
No doubt.
And after that, we have Cliff's Farm up in Hepburn, Saskatchewan. Go get you some quality Hereford and Maintainer genetics. Oldest Hereford breeder in Canada or Saskatchewan?
Canada.
That's what I thought.
I don't know if they're the oldest breeder, but they're the oldest,
registered
herd.
Okay.
I think.
Something slight like difference.
I'd call him, but we all know his kids are screaming in the background. They're trying to get put to bed. So, you know, there's really no point.
That is true.
Also, we have Mo Cattle Company. Best Sim Angus genetics in Carson and Gray County since 2023.
I would agree with that.
Still got some Angus genetics ready to go for sale. Not on sale. We know what we got. Makes an offer.
There you go. Reggie's ready to make somebody a good herd bull. Ready to go to work.
He just wants to love somebody.
Just ready to go to work.
Just wants to love somebody.
And also we have Texas Beverage and Package Store in Groom, Texas. Sweet little honey hole down there. They've got some really nice whiskeys for sale. And also we're continuing our tour of the budget bourbons.
Working class bourbons.
And so they have gifted us. We'll just roll straight into the Texas Beverage and Package Store booze review. They have gifted us a bottle of Old Granddad High Rye Mash Bill Bonded Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. This is 100 proof, which for all you Okies is 50% alcohol.
And that is a liter for under $40.
This was a liter for under $30.
Yes.
Pretty sure it was like 28.
Not a fifth, but a liter.
A liter. So, I mean, that is... That's cheap. Or a deal. That is a deal.
It could be considered cheap, but we were led to believe that it was...
He's heard good things about it.
Less cheap and more of a bargain.
There you go.
Inexpensive. That's the word I was looking for.
Inexpensive.
You want to try that in the Glencairn, or are you just going straight over ice?
Straight over ice.
Why do I even bother with the Glencairn?
Good question. I don't know. Boy, you can really smell the booze in that.
You can, but it's not as harsh as what I was expecting.
It's definitely no like paint thinnerish or anything like that.
No. Not even really fermented corn, but you can get the...
It's a little silage-y.
It's got a
this
sweet...
This is an agricultural podcast. We use agricultural terms. Don't be looking at me like that, old man.
It's got a very sweet...
Yeah, it's got that sweet corn, silage-y...
Mm-hmm. I'm not getting any silage off of it, but...
Pretty decent legs.
Got a nice color to it.
Very good color. Very oak forward.
It is, but it's not overly oaked. It doesn't have an oak finish to go with that oak forward. It's got a very sweet finish. Almost a little vanilla, maybe.
Something sweet. I'm still leaning towards sweet corn. You?
I have no idea. It tastes like bourbon to me. Very tasty.
It is. I mean, it's a... I'm not disappointed in this.
It's kind of like a second cousin to turkey. Just saying. But what do I know?
Like wild turkey?
Aye.
Okay. Okay. I thought you might have been talking about the animal for a second. I was just clarifying. Shit, I don't know if everybody's going to judge me for it. I like it. It's a little sweet. It's kind of oaky.
It's fairly smooth.
Doesn't have quite as oily of a mouthfeel as I would like.
It is a little lighter on the palate.
Get it over ice. I'm tasting a little bit more of the vanilla-y sweetness.
Yeah, it's the aftertaste has kind of got a vanilla note to it.
I'm still saying sweet corn.
You definitely have to get on the aftertaste to taste it.
It's a little hot. I mean, it's bonded.
It is 100 proof. You want to read the back of the label for him?
Well, it's Old Granddad bottled and bond in accordance with Old Granddad himself. And the U.S. government. That's really all it says. You want some water in it? No.
Soda water?
It is barreled for at least 4 years and bottled at exactly 100 proof. So, yeah, it's bottled and bond.
And where exactly was this made?
Kentucky. Yeah. Not
Clermont, Kentucky.
All right, who wants to go first on the score?
High rye mash bill.
It's good. You don't really get a lot of the rye out of it, a lot of the spice that you usually get out of a rye.
No, you don't, but you do get a little bit of the sweetness from a rye. So, 1 to 10. What are you giving it, David?
I'd give it an 8.
Okay. High score.
Okay. Swinging for the fences. I am going to give that a 5.75.
I'm at a 6.5.
6.5, really?
You
liked it that much better than the Kentucky 10 last week?
I do. I don't know. Maybe it's just the week, but that's a...
See, for a second I was going to go about a 6.5, but I decided that I didn't like it better than the Kentucky 10 of last week, and so I just stuck to the same score. It's very similar.
And maybe I should have, because maybe it should have been a little closer to the Kentucky 10.
I'm not going to tell you how to score this thing.
That was both solid whiskeys. I mean, we've had a really good intro into our budget bourbons.
Found a couple of winners so far. And thank you, Jared, at Texas Beverage and Package, for helping us pick these out.
Yeah, and sponsoring the podcast.
The Booze Review.
All right. Well, do we want to kill the day, do a farming fuck-up, or just start talking to old David?
I would say, have you been getting the farming fuck-ups I've been sending you?
Yes.
Have you got one pulled up?
I can pull one up pretty quick.
Let's do a farming fuck-up, then we'll kill the day.
Okay.
We haven't done a farming fuck-up in a while. People are going to want to hear it.
Oh. Oop.
I like that one. We can use that one.
Have we not done? Oh, we hadn't done that one before, have we?
Nope, we have not.
So either that one or this one?
I like that one too. I want to go with the plow.
Let's go with the plow. All right, David, so speculate wildly. You've been on a farm before. Used to be an old farmer yourself. What has happened here?
He got tired of digging out corn stalks from his pickers and decided to burn them out.
You know, I would say that is a possibility.
That rubber tire's not going to hold up too good, though.
No.
But is it cheaper to replace tires? Or to dig it out.
Farm labor's cheap.
It depends on how old those tires are. I mean, are they rotten? About ready to give it up anyway? Cut your losses. Burn them off the hubs.
Personally, I would have just taken the tires off and then folded it up and caught it on fire.
I mean, that's an easy possibility.
So
at least
I have
on that
an
right
alternate
side.
Speculation for this.
Oh, boy.
Is that he had some stalks on fire, and he went to plow around it, balled up, caught his plow on fire.
Okay, so I was thinking the same thing. The only problem I have with that is he's burning on both ends of the plow.
And not in the middle.
And not in the middle. It does not appear to be burning in the middle.
I beg to differ there. Because that one on the left, the fire's back behind. It's not on the picker. Probably what happened, he had a hot bearing, set them stalks on fire.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty good speculation.
I could see that. I could see that as well, because...
Whatever it is, it was a very bad day.
It's not going well for him. But one thing about it, if he does have a fire back there, that ground underneath the center of that plow is bare.
Some kind of bare.
Not jumping that is if it's not a high wind day.
No.
So he has achieved
his
objective of getting his stalks put out at least.
Should be okay on that front. And I don't know if I think he was just being funny whenever the guy posted this on Twitter. But he said he was tired of digging out stalks.
So just for the record, y'all haven't really explained to your listeners what is going on here. We have a sweet plow. And
I think it's a sweet plow.
It's a sweet plow. It's got to be.
Could be a...
And it's got the two fold-ups on both sides. And the left side's got a little fire on the ground back behind it. And the right side, the total picker's on fire. So if it's not a sweet plow, what would it be?
I don't think the picker's on fire there. I'm pretty sure that's the whole wing, sweeps and all.
Well, you know, when you get enough stalks based on the bottom, right. The bottom's covered plumb up.
Right.
This is probably a small sweep plow versus a large
sweep. It's got to be a small sweep plow because of the number of sweeps on it. Because mm-hmm. You see all the brackets. Because you can see the foot right there. So, I mean, you got... It's a little bitty sweep plow.
It could potentially be a field cultivator. But I don't think they're close enough together to be a field cultivator.
Anyway, you look at it, it looks like an insurance scam. Burn it down, the insurance company will buy you.
I don't think insurance is going to pay much on that. I think they're going to tell you to replace your tires and your bearings. Go on about your fucking day.
Well, you got to remember, there's hydraulic hoses and cylinders and everything else.
Yeah, but that plow's so old. I mean, that's
exactly.
Your paint's wore off. Scrap price for that, if anything. You're not going to get a new plow.
No.
If you're going to burn something down for insurance money, you got to do like a planter.
Tractor.
Exactly.
Combine.
Exactly. And on top of that, he's running a junky ass red tractor. So, like, who gives a shit? Burn it down.
There's one other possibility.
All right.
He can't was wait sick to hear and this. Tired of eating cold sandwiches, so he wanted to heat his sandwich up.
Now, that is a wild-ass speculation I appreciate that.
That's pretty wild. I mean, that is a man who has reached his breaking point. Like, I'll be the first to admit that I have placed one of the little pecan pies, you know, the little, like, 3-inch cross pecan. I've put one of those on an engine block on an 86 before.
I've done
the exhaust kind of.
I've done a sandwich in foil on exhaust before.
Mm-hmm.
It was a sandwich that was supposed to have melted cheese on it.
Did you catch some exhaust fumes off of it?
No, it really wasn't bad. I put it on the manifold.
That's where I put mine, and the pecans really just soaked up that exhaust.
It must have had a leak.
Like, it was perfectly fine if you scraped the pecans off and just ate the gooey part.
Okay,
boy.
Had a little diesel kick to the pecans.
Now, wait a second. You didn't stick it in the exhaust pipe, did you?
No, I set it on top of the manifold.
Uh-huh.
But did you have it wrapped?
The best of my abilities.
Okay.
Which are none.
Well, I...
Coming from old granddad himself.
I think I had some foil, but whatever.
All right, so that is
that's a hell of a fuck up. That's the kind of shit you find whenever you're sick and you sit your ass in your chair watching Shorzy and scrolling through Twitter.
I'd still like the last one. The last one is probably my favorite. He was just so tired eating cold sandwiches.
Just burn it down. Set to hell with it.
Burn this sumbitch down. God damn it, Darlene, I told you. No more cold sandwiches.
And you know what he was singing? While that was burning down, that old Toby Keith song about Should Have Been a Cowboy.
I'm All right, let's roll on into Killing the Day. Tyler, what do you got for us?
I have If It's Only For Tonight by Rich Henderson.
Solid song.
I like it.
I don't know that I'd ever heard it before, but...
It's a good one.
That is a good one.
Guy's got some good songs.
Sounds like it.
Uh-huh. And it's not as sad as I've been going on lately.
It's not. It's still sorrowful, but it's...
It's somber. It's
there
not
you
sad.
Go. There you go.
You should have heard last week's. Well, last week's was...
Really, the last few weeks...
Been kind of in the dumps.
Yeah.
I've been in a really good mood. But my music choice.
You got stuff going on at home you want to talk about, bud?
No.
We need to have a little therapy session. Just lay down on the couch over there. We'll talk it out.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I need. You two yahoos tromping around in my psyche.
What are you trying to say?
I don't trust you two.
I think we can figure this out.
Precisely what the fuck I'm trying to say. I've got no problems. I'm perfect.
You're saying that with an aggressive enough tone, Tyler. I don't think I believe you.
Huh. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about, you know, how happy you are in life. And go ahead and rattle off the name of your song.
With there. Sorrow Mr. Symphony Royce. By Colton Jesse.
What was that?
Sorrow Symphony by Colton Jesse.
Still running blind. Hindered by destructive thoughts that echo in my mind. But I'm still green. I'm living day by day.
Well, it wasn't quite as sorrowful as I expected it to be.
And the name really fools you, doesn't it?
I don't know about really fooled me.
But I mean, it's not as down in the dumps.
Maybe that dude just doesn't know what sorrow means.
It could be. Could be. So I was trying to look up to see if the song that Chris Terry shared with us last week was on Spotify.
Oh, which one was that?
Honky Tonk Women by Brothers Comatose.
Yeah.
I am not seeing it on there.
Is it not?
No. Because, you know, he sent us a YouTube link.
I remember. I like the Brothers Comatose.
I do too. We've got one of their songs on here.
Oh, we do.
On the playlist, yeah. But they did a rendition of Honky Tonk Women with the Rainbow Girls.
All right. Sounds like they could be fun to watch.
And it pretty solid rendition of it. So, I mean, if y'all are in, want to see a decent music video, look that one up.
Very good. Very good. Well, there's two good additions. You still don't have anything you want to add to the playlist there, Papa?
No. I will mention, though, that you boys' music is very soothing, very relaxing, very boring.
You're about to call us lazy, aren't you?
I didn't go there. Back in the day when...
He did say boring.
When I was your age, we had music that was fun and lively and you danced to. Y'all don't know about dancing, but it's an ancient thing that, you know, people my age used to do.
Hey, I'm married. I have a kid. I have no reason to dance.
Exactly.
You
totally don't get it.
It's a mating ritual. We're past that.
No,
it's just peacocking.
Okay, enough said on that subject.
And also, did you not, you're not listening to the podcast, are you? Because I had some really upbeat ones there for a while with Queso Blanco.
Yeah.
Boy, you can dance to that one.
Does that go good with
something
potato
like that.
Chips or tortilla chips?
Well.
See, a lot of these slow songs are the good hold 'em close songs.
the women want to be close to us. They don't want to be off dancing kind of by themselves off a little bit away like back in your day whenever y'all didn't have deodorant and
indoor plumbing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, y'all stank. You need to be able to move.
Closing time songs.
Yeah, every time's closing time with us.
Yeah.
Always be closing.
ABC. Just like in sales.
So when are we going to get to the tool of the day or whatever you used to call it?
The what?
The top 10 best tools.
We haven't done one of those in a while.
We haven't. I mean, we could do a tool of the day.
I don't know about tool of the day. We already did top 5 tools.
Well, I had a rude comment I was fixing to make, so I'm glad we just moved on past that.
I was afraid that that's where you were going to go with that, but I wasn't exactly sure which direction you were going to sling that title, so...
Strong family resemblance.
What an ass.
Yeah, we're both looking at you.
I know. Okay, David, do you want to tell the folks a little bit about yourself?
No.
Vaguely?
No.
A little bit about your history. What have you done in life? Did you grow up farming?
I did. Farming, ranching, all the fun things.
Okay.
Dancing to fast music.
Went to college.
What'd you go to college for?
Animal science.
Where'd you go to college?
West Texas State University.
Now known as West Texas A&M.
What? It wasn't then.
I said now.
Yeah, it was true.
They were purchased by A&M.
Got out of there, worked for Clint Freeman for 2 or 3 years. Farmed for several years.
And who's Clint Freeman? For people at home, that would be Hadley's grandfather.
Yep, the infamous... Hadley Freeman's grandfather.
Yes, him. And then I went to the oil field because things back in the 80s weren't quite as lustrous as they are now farming. So some of us had to leave. So we went to the oil field, gas field. I ended up in a gas processing plant. So far, I've worked for 13, 14 different companies, never left the same field. And here I am.
And here you are.
Yeah.
Well, you have got to have some interesting stories about either dealing with farmers or ranchers or something from your time as a farmer or rancher.
Well, that caught me off guard. You know, now I'm an operations manager, which is kind of over the whole field. And having a farming background, I always got along real good with farmers. Most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's some nutcases out here that...
There's always those one or two out there that, you know, are just totally hard to be deal with.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but...
We have a bit of a reputation.
Nah, you got no reputation. I can tell you stories, but I'll pass because I can't use names.
Apparently, you got to shoot at more than one pumper to get a reputation.
That's true.
Maybe nobody liked that bumper.
Both struck possibilities.
I will say one of my biggest peeves is when a agriculturalist calls me out complaining about driving on the road grass.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it. You've done it. We've all done it. And we go out there and he's driving me around, showing me where he's doing it. And he says, see right there? Somebody's cutting a corner right there. Okay. It wasn't us. Because we don't go around that corner. But then when we leave to go to the next site, he goes around the corner. You know, so it's so much better for him than us. So, you know, it's one of those deals. Just saying.
That's fair.
I could see the gripe on that side of it. Especially with that specific scenario.
Mm-hmm. So what is... Your number one, from back your time in the fields, what is the one thing that will make you mad that a farmer, rancher, whatever does?
Not perform a one call, which is a dig test.
Wasn't what I expected to be.
I actually thought that's where he was going to go with
that. Wait a minute. Now, you know, this happens, but...
Because he's lectured me several times on this.
It's whenever they plow through one of our lines...
And with a plow or with a trencher?
Either or. You know, the line's cut. And they say, well, I didn't know that line was there. And I said, well, there is a law that says you will perform a one call. You call this deal, and everybody that has a pipeline in that section will come in and identify their pipelines, put pretty little pin flags every 10, 20 feet, and that's where our line's at. Don't hit it. And sure enough, they'll go plowing through there and hit it. It's a simple concept.
Yeah. And what's the phone number for one call? Because I'm pretty sure Royce doesn't know it.
He knows it.
I do know it.
I've educated him.
What about our
times.
People at home? They might not know it.
Yeah, they might not know. Let's go ahead and.
It's 1-800-DIGG, DIGTESS in the state of Texas.
TESS or TEST?
TESS. Dick Tess.
Okay, fair enough.
So, there you go.
Okay.
Any other bitches?
How long is this podcast?
However long we want it to be, David.
Well, we don't
I
want
think
it to
I've
be
got something
long.
Like 9 hours left on the card.
No. We don't need to go.
We'll break this into three. I mean, we're not doing a podcast next week because I'm going to be gone. Week after that's looking a little hazy because we got to be weeding calves. So,
I will tell you that farming is a noble profession. And in past history, it hasn't been the most highest paying profession. But still, it has a lot of high values attached to it and everything.
I would agree with you on that.
And traditions. But on the other hand, the same thing applies to the oil field. It's the same people out there doing the same thing, producing something.
Yeah.
You produce food, we produce gas that will dry your food so that we can all grind it into cornmeal and so forth. So there's always been friction between farming and oil field. It doesn't need to be there. We're all just trying to do the same thing, you know. So there you go. Move on to something else.
Very good. Hang on. First off, I want to find some common ground.
Let's find some common ground.
Between the farmers and the oil field. How do we feel about closed gates?
Got to be closed.
I agree. 110%.
See?
There we go.
Good job, Tyler. Bringing people together.
The great emancipator.
That's it. But there's always the one person in both, what do you call it? Fields,
occupations
that leaves gates open.
Heard a story that just this afternoon told you about it. Guy was weaning some calves, left the gate open. Not once, not twice,
three times.
The gate got left open. Three times gate got left open by the ranchers. Boy, if I was them, next time I went to yell at a pumper for leaving a gate open, I'd sure think twice before I got much bass in my voice.
I don't know. Would you call them ranchers, though?
They ranch.
They farm and run some cattle.
It's ranching.
Okay.
I mean, after all, what is the definition of ranching? Google it. Quick, one of you sunny boys, Google it.
I mean, the basis definition of it would be a grass farmer. You're farming grass for the cattle to eat.
Ranching is a large farm, especially in the western U.S. Nope, that's just ranch. Never mind. Or a type of thick white salad dressing.
There you go.
There you go.
I mean, that would have been my daughter's definition of it.
The activity or business of breeding cattle on a ranch. Boom. They're ranchers. Lawyered, motherfucker.
Fair enough.
Let's not talk about lawyers.
Yeah, there's no need to bring them into this.
Well, we all hate lawyers.
I know.
That's another. See, boom.
Common ground.
Bringing people together. Unification.
There you go.
So speaking of ranches, what's been going on with the ranch there, Royce?
We weaned our... Have we talked about weaning...
I don't think we talked about Teddy.
Weaning Teddy? Well, we weaned Teddy the other day. And I guess we'll go ahead and tell that story because it's kind of funny.
It's an entertaining story.
So we weaned Teddy, and we put his mama behind hot wire.
Hey, hang on. Teddy's the bull?
Yeah. The weanling bull. Had
his ears froze off?
Yes.
Yeah, he's got teddy bear ears. That's why we call him Teddy.
He was born in February. Okay. So everybody has a frame of reference for his age.
It was on February 3rd, actually, my daughter's birthday.
Okay. Born on February 3rd.
During a polar vortex.
Yes. It was very cold outside.
for all you non-scientific folks, that's a real big cold front.
Cold as hell.
Yeah. So anyway, we wean Teddy. Only one we wean, but we want to get the bulls off of all the cows. Away from him. Yeah, so that he doesn't breed one of his sisters or the other calves out there.
Well, that's incest.
Well, as we've learned, our cows really take a family approach to
breeding. Yeah, as we recently learned. So anyway, the next day, or we kick Teddy out in the bull pasture because we really don't have anything else to wean him with right now.
Just lock him up by himself or put him out with the bulls.
Yeah, decided to put him out with the bulls.
And he was a healthy little fucker at 900 pounds, so we figured he could fend for himself. Yeah.
So we kick him across the road from the cows in the bull pasture behind a barbed wire fence. Next morning, I'm driving to the shop, and I get about a mile from the shop, and there's this cow standing in the bar ditch. I'm like, God dang, which cow is out? Whose cow is out? I get closer. I'm like, oh, God dang, that's one of ours. Sure enough, it is. It's number 52, and I'm thinking...
53.
Or, yeah, 53. I'm like, well, that must be Teddy's mom, because they're standing right across the road from each other, just hollering at each other. And upon further research, we figure out...
53 she is not his mama.
She is a cow that lost her calf in the second polar vortex that we had.
About 2 weeks after the...
Yeah, after the first one. And... But boy, she is acting like that is her calf. She is convinced that is her calf.
She wants no part of leaving him.
We get to looking. She is not a dry cow either. So it all makes sense why a eight-month-old calf weighed 900 pounds.
Yeah, 8 months, 900 pounds.
Because everybody was real impressed by that 900-pound weight. Until we figured out, oh, Teddy had two mamas.
Two mamas. Which, did we ever go back and look and see? His mama is not dry, right?
We never went back and looked. We should have, but...
Neither here nor there.
I think the odds are not in the favor that she was dry.
I didn't notice any of our cows looking dry whenever we walked him down that day.
I did not either. And we should have noticed at least one of them.
Yeah.
Really, three of them should have been dry.
I'm a little confused.
Well, we had some fall calvers.
We had two fall calvers in the one that lost her calf.
So we should have had three dry cows. We only had two dry cows. Because I know that the one cow, Reggie's mama, I know that she was dry because she's the one that I watched fight with every other fucking cow out of your wife's herd. I mean, just ran around with that old high head just trying to start fights with people. I think she even tried to start a fight with jeans.
Could have. Wouldn't surprise me.
High-headed bitch. So, yeah, that was a fun story. Fun times.
Yeah.
So, the cow's out. What? Don't drop me. Just bring it up.
Well, we just put her in with my brother-in-law's cows right across the road. We just put her behind a barbed wire fence. So, we fence line weaned across the road instead of weaning in.
That's a bad idea.
Across the section.
Well, you know what? Here's the deal. She wasn't going back to the hot wire. And even if we got her back to the hot wire, she wasn't going to stay there.
No. No. No, she would not walk down that road. I don't know how we got her to walk in with
the
other
cows. She sat
there
for a solid 3 days and like didn't move. Just yelling at him from across the road.
Yeah.
That's a good mama.
Yes. Yeah.
Be even better if she hadn't stepped on her calf's head.
But I mean, when I was trying to get the little fella to live, I'd scratch on the baby. I'd scratch on the mama.
She's real gentle.
Oh, yeah, very gentle.
She just...
Not many cows going to let you handle their calf like that. Feed.
Yeah, because I did the same thing. And I was a little nervous about it. That's why I kind of kept my ass just sitting in the gate where I could...
Oh, no, she was real friendly. You can tell when you're dragging their calf in and they're not in your pocket.
See, I wasn't there for that part. Yeah. I was there while it was dark in the barn with no lights, and I was trying to force feed this calf.
And she was in your face, but you didn't get to the point where she tried to lick you.
She did not ever try to lick me.
I don't know that she did me either, but that was more her approach. She wasn't going to headbutt you.
She got right up in my face, and I kind of swatted her back off.
Well, that's because she wanted you to scratch her.
Well, I know that now.
And she was also just curious.
Super friendly cow.
Yeah.
Super friendly cow.
Number one rule whenever you're raised on a farm or ranch is you never get between an animal and their mother.
Nope. That is a That is a hard rule.
Don't matter what species it is. Human, hog, cow, whatever.
Just about rabbits.
Rabbits?
Yeah.
I know nothing of rabbits.
Rattlesnakes?
Cut their head off.
Okay.
Don't give them a chance.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. You got an animal science major here. I figured we'd ask the question about the rabbits.
So you ever been chased by
money in rabbits.
A mad mama, David?
Mm-hmm.
What is the meanest animal you've ever been chased by?
A banty rooster.
So you and Royce have this in common.
Really?
I'll agree with you, David. That's building bridges here.
Yeah, we got something in common. That's unique. Banty rooster. So, I guess you want to hear the story.
Well, yeah, we want to hear the story.
I was about 6 years old and lived west of White Deer, 2-3 miles. And everybody in town kept dropping their stray dogs off close to our house. So, naturally, they would come to our house. And one of my jobs, when I got home from school, I would go out and feed the horses. So we had this round granary. I would go in, grab the feed and dump it in the trough and run back to the house, as all children do. Well, my dad came up with this global plan of getting chickens. So he had a bunch of banty roosters. And these roosters like to chase everything walking. So, one day I come home from school, and there was a hog pasture between the house and this granary where we got to feed. Had two wire hot wire around it. And every day I would look out the door, no chickens around, and I would haul buns out there across there. Got to where I could just jump over that hot wire pretty quickly and regain and then go on and get to feed. Feed the horse and come back. Jump the fence again. This was all working good till this one day. I got to fall back here a little bit. These stray dogs came into the point to where they would come in. I would buddy up with them. They would eat the roosters. My dad would shoot the dogs and everything was good. So this one day came up and I come home from school. My dad and my uncle were out working cattle in the lot. And they had mow-boarded, which is really deep plowing, big chunks of dirt up this hog pasture. So I looked both ways, no roosters. Well, they were waiting right around the corner of the house. So I take off running, hit the hog wire, jump over it, cleared it perfectly, hit them big clods and got my feet tangled up with everything. Ended up on the ground with these roosters right on my heels and them up on my head beating me. I can still hear feathers and everything around my head. Well, my uncle come out and saved me, picked up a clod and eliminated a rooster. So it was a win-win, but still, to this day, I don't do chickens, dove, pheasant, geese.
But peacocks. You've been dove hunting with us.
Yeah, he carries a shotgun too, doesn't he?
Killing them.
True.
Yeah. You know, they are very dangerous animals.
Yeah.
There you go.
I would agree. I mean, I've got a somewhat similar story. Mom bought chickens when I was little and had a rooster with them. And there were a couple times I walked into the barn and the rooster had attacked me. And I can't remember how many times it was before Dad just took a shotgun to the rooster. I didn't have to worry about that anymore.
There you go. You didn't even have to find stray dogs to offer to them.
No. No, I didn't.
Just for the record, we got down to two roosters. And this big old shaggy sheepdog showed up, killed one of the remaining two. And like I say, up to that point, it was a very good plan because we got rid of the stray dogs, the chickens, everything was good until I had to go shoot the dog. And that wasn't so much fun, but it worked.
I could see that.
Nothing worse than shooting dogs.
No, that's a hard thing to have to do.
Yeah, especially when you buddied them up to kill the chickens, you know. So.
It's like, hey, bud, it's kind of my fault, but
yeah,
you're headed to a better place.
Yeah. So, what else we got on this fabulous podcast?
Well, I don't know. We're just kind of getting fired off here, bud.
Well, you better hurry. It's about my bedtime.
The night is young.
On that same line of mean foul, I remember when we were judging in 4-H and FFA, there was a place out on the Loop in Pampa that we'd go to judge hogs. You know the family.
Yeah.
And they had a turkey. That was the meanest damn turkey.
Turkeys are mean.
Like, you would watch where you were going. And that turkey was in a pen, but it could get out of the pen.
There is a reason they call them thunder chickens.
Oh, yeah.
Because when the toms get to whatever they call that, well, it'll make the ground shake.
They're mean.
I concur.
I'd be a lot more scared of a turkey than I would a chicken.
I don't know. When you're a little kid, roosters are, they're plenty big.
Fair enough.
True.
We never had chickens, believe it or not.
I can see why.
Didn't have stray dogs either.
Well, it's because we lived in town.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody brought them out here.
Yeah. So, on the stray dog topic, at our office, apparently they closed the dog pound in town. And so everybody's just driving in the country and dumping dogs more frequently than they were.
Oh, that's terrible.
We've got like 8 dogs running around our plant.
Oh.
Which one of them, we thought he was going to die because we found him with his head in a tote, but... He came through that. He was a real good dog. We liked him a lot. But he was out there playing on the highway and got ran over by a semi. So now we got a new dog. So cool. He comes in the office, hangs out, walks around, gets petted during meetings.
Okay.
It's good times. But the point of this story, quit dumping your fucking dogs.
That's a terrible thing to do.
Just go shoot them if that's how little you think of them. And I know I just said that shooting dogs is the worst, but... It's better than watching a dog starve to death.
Yeah, because that's what they're going to do.
Or get run over by a truck and, you know, maybe they just get weaned. Maybe they just sit out there and starve to death.
Which is pretty much what's going to happen when you turn a dog out in the country.
Best case scenario, a dog gets dumped out in the country, he's getting shot.
Or eaten by coyotes.
I'm going to say best case scenario is he gets shot.
I mean, second is coyotes kill
him. I'm not saying most likely. Best possibility is that he gets shot.
I'm saying the quickest form of death for him is
the most humane form of death.
I think mountain lion beats it.
I think a
mountain lion makes pretty quick work of a town dog.
Splitting hairs. Killed by wild animals.
I've seen coyotes. They'll play with shit a little bit before they kill it.
Fair enough.
I'm pretty sure mountain lions, big cats, they never even see it coming. They're just running through the pasture going, where am I going to find something to eat? And then boom, darkness.
They are the food.
So let's talk farming.
All right, what do you want to hear?
What's happening?
Nothing.
Well, I've been cutting corn. A little Milo.
Trying to cut a little Milo.
How's the corn doing?
You know, the corn's kind of all over the board.
Yep, fair to Midland for the most part.
I have heard guys that averaged 125 bushel. I have heard guys that are averaging like 280 bushel.
So what's the difference?
Pretty much water.
Water, a little bit of practices, but
I'm not even
going to
say rain. It's mainly the guys with big water making good yields.
Yeah.
Royce, how did yours do?
It was bumping that 200 mark. Mm-hmm. So, but that's not my corn. I hadn't seen the actual numbers on it. I cannot verify it. That's what I was told.
Well, you know what they say. Somebody tells you their yield. Knock 20 bushel off. There's your answer.
Just 20?
But I did talk to a guy today that had stripped, 500 acres of cotton?
Yeah.
And he said that it was averaging about 2 bales and 57.25 loan.
57. He had not had anything loan under 57.
Yeah.
And I think they've only done dry land.
I haven't seen him do any irrigated, but I didn't know they'd done 500 acres.
I didn't either, but they have done a couple of larger patches, so it doesn't surprise me they have covered that much ground.
Yeah.
So based on y'all's observations, what percent cotton harvest are we in? Have we done 10% yet?
Probably around four.
Four?
Maybe 10, but
I don't think you're 10 would be pushed. Yet.
Depends on how big of an area you're calling. Like the two counties?
If you get down around Lubbock, fuck, they might be at 90 because there wasn't probably 1,000 acres of cotton in the whole place.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. Like the panhandle as a whole or just the two counties?
Which I don't think Lubbock's still in the panhandle.
Depends on who you talk to, but I don't consider it part of the panhandle.
I think you get south of Lubbock. You're in West Texas, right?
I mean, Lubbock is South Plains.
Well, but you only have the panhandle in West Texas to categorize.
Well, yeah.
And I think Lubbock is the dividing line. You know, north of Lubbock is the panhandle. South of Lubbock,
I would
And honestly, I might go as far as to saying like Plainview, South Plainview, into West Texas.
Yeah.
That might be a little too far north, but...
All right, what do you think, David?
I could go with that.
I mean, look at the area between Lubbock and Plainview, very similar to just south of Lubbock.
It really is.
All the way to Mexico.
Well, I mean, if you draw a line from the Rio Grande to... Or not the Rio Grande, the...
The Red River.
The Red River, straight across, where does Lubbock lay?
Lays south of that, I believe.
Just a little bit, I think.
Not far, but it does lay south of it.
That's where I'm going. There's a Texas map right there on the wall, dude, if you'll look up.
Yeah, but I can't see Lubbock on that because it's just got cattle trails.
The other side of the panhandle comes all the way down to even with El Paso. So how do you cut that off?
Well, you're getting confused between the Llano Estacada and the panhandle. Panhandle is north from the panhandle. Right.
But what I'm saying, you know, the panhandle is where...
Okay, I'm going to draw this line right now. It's Highway 82. So that cuts in Wichita Falls. Basically from Wichita Falls to Hobbs.
They're calling Wichita Falls the panhandle.
I'm calling it. I'm looking at a map. But yeah, I would say Wichita Falls. Maybe not Hobbs. Fuck, Hobbs is way down there.
Way down there.
What the hell's the name of that town? Cossie, Lingo, Rogers... South Portales.
Riveting stuff we've got going on here.
So, I almost think you draw that line from Vernon to Plainview to Portales. I think that might be a good dividing line.
So viewers, get on our Facebook. Y'all have Facebook, right?
Yeah, we got a Facebook group. You're not a part of it?
Tell us where you think the panhandle is.
See, because I would have gone Childress.
Childress? You think Childress is the way to go on that?
Is the bottom corner. Because that's as close
to
where the Red River meets. Oklahoma and Texas meet at the Red River.
Okay.
Because it's partially between Childress and Quanah where they meet.
And Lubbock is south of there, so...
Plainview is south of there. If you're going straight across, but... Like I said, the other straight line on the west side goes quite a bit further...
It goes way
south
down there.
Than that.
Way down there.
That's too far.
That's too far south.
Yeah.
You've got to pick a line further north than that.
I agree with you. I agree with you on that.
Which it also still kind of baffles me upon occasion, what we label as Central Texas.
Isn't it? Yeah.
You ever thought about that?
Actually, the way I look at it, if it's within the boundaries of the state lines... It doesn't matter where you're at, you're in Texas.
Unless you're in East Texas, and then you're just a weirdo.
Well, that's...
I mean, it's easy for us to make calls like that, because we're from God's country up in the panhandle. You get into East Texas, like, I mean, you're fucking Arkansas. Like, those folks don't like it.
You know, there's somebody down there that likes it.
I mean, they do have good food, because they get close to Louisiana.
We had some really good catfish once at East Texas.
There's some very good barbecue comes from East Texas.
Yeah.
Never had an East Texas barbecue. They got barbecue, lots of timber. Yeah, that's easy for them. Remember whenever that preacher told us that there wasn't going to be no beer and whiskey in heaven, we were going to go to hell because we had plenty of suds washed down that catfish?
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That was coastal Texas. That's South Texas, though.
No, it's East Texas.
Houston?
Well, I mean, it's Cleveland?
Which is north of Houston.
Yeah, anyway, I'm calling it East Texas.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because they go fishing in the creek.
I mean, we were in the Piney Woods in Houston.
Living in a van down by the river. Like, I mean, yeah. That's pretty Arkansas to me.
So, Noah, enough of geography. What? How's the wheat crop coming? I mean,
the wheat crop?
Got it planted yet, or what?
We are 100% planted.
I would say probably 85 to 90% of the wheat is in the ground. Maybe not.
Nah, I'd go 75% because I know a couple of big people that are just going to start when it dries up. And they are some of the bigger players in the wheat growing here. So they've got lots of acres.
So let's cut to the chase. What have we done to compensate for fertilizer cost? Have we cut back on fertilizer? Decreased seeds?
We never back off on fertilizer.
This is a man that sells fertilizer.
We never back. That is number one. That is robbing Peter to kick yourself in the ass.
We had a whole podcast about that.
Yes.
But no, we did not. Personally, we did not cut back on the fertilizer. We used the same fertilizer we've been using, even though it was twice the price it's been on average and $100 higher than it was last year, I think.
Sounds right. Had a 9 in front of it this year. Had an 8 in front of it last year.
I think that was, yeah.
Maybe not a full $100, but.
So what's Kansas City wheat worth now?
Not as much as it was about a month ago.
3 weeks ago. 3 weeks, a month ago.
Yeah.
It's in the nines.
I don't know. Did it come back up at the end of this week? I quit looking. I was sick. I didn't.
That's so wrong.
It is higher than.
I'm not selling wheat. What do I care? Exactly. And we never cut off on fertilizer.
$9.24.
It's March contract.
What's the July contract?
I don't have the July. July, $9.19.
Have y'all ever sold wheat for $2?
Sold some for.
I've sold it in the threes.
I want to say 3.25.
Yeah. So you pulled up the market, sir. Wheat.
You're looking at that contract, 919. And I'm real sure it's got a positive basis right now, which is odd for our area.
Really? It still does?
I don't know about currently, but I know when I sold mine, it was at a positive basis.
Well, you know, the rail's going to go on strike again in November. What they're talking about.
Oh, I had not heard that.
Yes. Yes, that's why fertilizer prices are remaining strong when there's no reason for them to. So that could be fun.
So we've got a gas man here.
Hey, hang on. First off, this kind of pertains to your industry. I was at the liquor store last night. Big shock.
No, we don't drink.
Big shock. So I was at the liquor store, and I was waiting to pay out, and the owner of the store, not our favorite store, I was in White Deer, sorry, was outside dealing with somebody in the drive-thru, and she comes back in and says, they just said they're going to quit selling diesel 3 days before Thanksgiving. I said, what? She said, yeah, they're not going to sell diesel starting 3 days before Thanksgiving. I was like, why? Well, they're going to run out. There's not going to be any diesel 3 days before Thanksgiving.
I mean, you look at the price.
Has anybody
you would
else heard
that.
This?
I have not heard that.
There is a shortage.
But it's a shortage of supply. Like I heard a while back that our reserves, or however they measure that, are the tightest that they have ever been in like the last 100 years or whatever. But they're still making diesel, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, they're still pumping oil. They're still producing gas. Like.
Not necessarily, because the big refineries traditionally around this time of year, and don't quote me on any of this because I'm just an operations manager, they quit making diesel and shift to making home heating oil, something we're not used to around here.
Yeah, right. But even the refineries down here do that.
Yes.
Okay.
Because there's a big demand for heating oil.
Yeah.
Because, you know, them people up in the Northeast and everywhere, they have to have heating oil to survive.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, we have to have diesel to survive, too. And with the current cutback of production because of y'all's president, there's not the oil supply to generate said products. So, there you go. Sacrifices have to be made. Now, sacrifices between diesel and heating oil. I don't know. They're talking about rationing. They've already started rationing heating oil, from what I hear, based on Fox, which is, you know, a Republican-based broadcast.
Well, I mean, here's the deal. We've already learned you cannot trust any news source.
Yes, correct. Including this podcast, but, you know.
Hey, what we say on here, we think is 100% correct.
Okay. But we do have a disclaimer. I'll refer you to the little kids at the beginning.
Worth what you paid for it.
It's true. But, you know, so diesel, everything runs on diesel. From the ships in the Gulf to the trains bringing us all our vital stuff, including your fertilizer and your grains hauled out, yes, and diesel and everything, including the trucks and the tractors and everything producing that, including these stuff that we use in our industry. I mean, backhoes, drip trucks, everything runs on diesel. So I don't know how to even answer all these questions.
So I got another question that you're probably not going to know the answer to, if you're not in the refinery business. Do they make diesel, like diesel, gasoline, kerosene, it all comes from the same refinery? Right.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I know where you're going with this, and I know you had to take organic chemistry in college.
No, I did not.
I did not either.
I did.
Really?
Yeah.
No, well, I changed my major so I wouldn't have to take it, actually.
I kind of did the same thing.
Really?
Yes.
I even took organic chemistry.
Dude, I barely got through regular chemistry. That is how bad I am.
You didn't have Mr. Schramm. He was a very good teacher.
No, I had Paul,
yeah. Anyway,
it's gonna bug the shit out of me.
So
yeah,
hydrocarbons. It doesn't matter. You bring it in. You've got so many different hydrocarbons to come off, and where they come off depends on which phase it's in. I mean, just like the bourbon you're drinking, they distilled that. The overhead off that still came out and produced bourbon,
right?
Because it's ethanol whiskey.
Yeah,
ethanol alcohol. You know, but even the same way on oil and everything comes off at a different stage. Your lightings come off first, ethane, methane, stuff like that. And then your C6s plus and isobutanes and all that, it all draws off to the point. But whatever you end up with diesel or condensate or whatever.
Right.
So it just depends on which refinery is taking that strip down to the final point, or to the point to you get diesel.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Kinda.
Yeah, I can see no organic chemistry. What's wrong with this world?
Well, but okay, so it's not so much that part that's confusing me, it's the refinery part.
So each refinery is refining a different product.
Not necessarily. They all start with the same base product.
Yeah, they start with crude.
Okay, so like, let's talk about the refinery in Borger, because that's easy for us to think about, because we've all seen it.
It's one
so
refinery.
So they're taking in crude, and they're refining it down to a certain point in your scale.
In that scale, they take. It's my understanding, I've never been there, that they do the full meal deal.
So they make it everything.
Everything.
So they're producing, they're producing diesel, gasoline, kerosene, avgas, all of it. Mm-hmm. So from one product, you're making.
So if they're doing 15, everything, why is it that they're not making diesel? They're switching over to heating oil.
Because that is my understanding. It's the world's largest inland refinery.
Oh, so they're doing everything, yes, because they're of their scale. So like the other refineries, like if they're just going for heating oil, do they pump the remainder of their stuff to somebody else to further refine? Or am I not understanding that part right?
Well, just for the record, I work in the gas business.
I know.
So much,
but you seem to have a pretty good handle on this.
Part.
I mean, you took organic chem where we did not.
That's true.
You're the expert of the room.
So a gas plant brings it in and turns it into what we call a Y-grade. It's an easy strip. We get the heavies out. We get the lights out. We separate it to a certain point, and then we'll send our Y-grade to the Gulf Coast to strip out two different products like your isobutanes, your pentanes, and all that stuff, which they do down there.
Okay.
And they switch it up. or break it down further and then distribute it from that point. Crude oil is kind of the same way. It just depends on what the company that owns the plant, how far they want to take it. Every step you do costs millions of dollars, and they have to decide, do I really want to go that far? Do I want to quit here and send it down there and make an easy cut?
Okay.
And I do think you are correct that that is the world's largest inland refinery.
That's what I've always heard.
Was at one point. I don't know.
I don't think anybody's built a bigger one inland.
I haven't heard of one.
Because I think even in the Middle East, they will pipeline that shit or truck it closer to the coast. To a port.
Yeah.
And why do we send it to a port?
To ship it.
Ship it where?
Everywhere?
Apparently in right now. To bring it in.
What?
With our gas prices, I'm saying in.
I think we're still pretty big exporters. We're sending it to the Ukraine right now.
Are we?
Europe's way low on gas because they pissed off the Russians.
Yeah.
And the Americans blew up that pipeline. But that's conspiracy theory corner for Sorghum Jesus. He's not here, so we're not going to talk about that.
We'll wait and have him on.
So what do you think with your knowledge of the gas field? Why do you think gas prices are how they are right now?
How are they right now?
They seem kind of high from what I've heard.
They actually, on the contract, they look fairly low, but I know my last gas bill, I paid $10 in MCF. And right now we're sitting at the Dease contract at $5.68.
Well, first of all, I don't deal with prices.
I understand that, but you deal with production, and production generally leads to.
So,
I mean, there's two parts to pricing, and that's supply and demand.
Okay, your Ag 213 is coming in.
I think it had a different number when we were there, but I know what he's talking about.
Marketing.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he's talking supply and demand for you.
Well, I've got a business and economics degree.
Uh huh. So it's supply and demand. People can't or won't produce it to a certain degree because why would you quit growing wheat? You grow wheat. Why would you quit growing wheat?
When the price gets so cheap. But at this price, isn't that a good price to produce it?
Well, how many regulations do you have to offset those costs?
Okay, that is a fair point. So you add the regulations into it.
And the manpower, the equipment costs, which it's very hard to get parts for compressors now.
Yeah.
Or anything else. It may take you 6 months to get a small regulator, you know. So supply and demand. The demand is still there.
But the supply is so low.
But do I want to supply it at this cost where it drives me into bankruptcy? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's basic economics.
You know.
Okay, so I got a question for you.
Oh, Lord, you're full of
it. I'm full of it. That's my job, bud. That's my
job.
He
is full of it.
And I think both of you might have something on this. Probably not. I don't know. You don't pay that much attention to your granddad. So if you were to shut off a gas well, say no. We ain't selling it. We ain't making no money. Close valve. 6 months, year down the road, price comes up. You want to open the valve back up. Is it that simple? You just turn your compressors back on and roll with it? Or is there, like, how big of a price jump would you have to have? Like, is there a whole bunch of shit that you're going to have to rebuild and fix and do all that?
Once again, you may be exceeding my expertise because I know that the state of Texas has rules.
Well, I'm not talking so much from a regulatory standpoint.
You've got to file a deal.
I knew
if you're gonna idle a gas well, because we've done that.
If you quit producing a well, you say I'm done with it, it's over. You have so long to plug said well, and then it goes away. What you're saying is...
I'm just saying shut it down for a little while.
Well, that will all be based on what your contract to your purchaser says. Some of them say, you know, 90 days, you got to shut it off. Right-of-way grants or your Lisa grants, some of them say 30 days, if you don't produce anything, that goes back to the landowner. Some, you know, there's so many stipulations and so many different contracts that it may be to the point to where you say, okay, we either produce as well, even though it's not making money, or we plug it or give it back to the landowner. So it's a very complicated business.
I wasn't talking so much from a regulatory or a contractual standpoint. I'm saying from an actual production standpoint. Like, do you just turn the valve back on and get at it? Or are you going to have to work that well? Can they sit there idle for an
that is extended a good question.
Period of time?
It depends on where you're at.
So probably a colder, wetter climate, you're going to have more trouble than...
Not necessarily that. It's more what your formation is. If you go over on the eastern panhandle, they can open the valve and have gas immediately. They may have to pump water off of it, pump salt water, and get the thing flowing again. Over here, because we're on a negative pressure vacuum field, you've got to have a compressor to pull it. That thing's been sitting there for six months, year, whatever. You know how it is whenever
it's going to be a lot of air.
Sits. It's going to be a lot of repairs and maintenance.
You might have to rebuild the compressor because, yeah, I mean, your seals are going to be
dried out.
And yeah, no, I can see that.
But on the other hand, do you want to give away your gas and pay an enormous electric bill to give away your gas?
Well, I hear electric companies are really willing to play ball at this point.
Yeah, they're not giving away the electricity. They are playing ball on building the lines to give you electricity or to sell you electricity.
Well, maybe
sorry.
If you've already got lines, maybe they're willing to play ball on the price.
I don't think they are. No, the price is what it is.
So
I know on irrigation engines, they are interested in playing ball on getting you the power so that you can swap from natural gas to electricity. So they can burn the natural gas.
We've been trying to install two rectifiers, which is voodoo, you might say, to keep the pipeline intact. Requires electricity. We had the ground beds dug and buried immediately. Getting the electricity hooked to those, we're now about 4 or 5 months into that. They don't care, you know.
Really?
Yeah. So to contradict what you just said, I don't know what they're doing.
Well, like you said, they're pissed off at the gas people.
Yeah. No, I know we're in talks with the electric company to get some wells put on electricity. This is coming from them. They are the transformers and everything that we need, they have and are not in short supply, and they are willing to build a half mile of line in some instances to get us electricity at no cost to us.
So I've seen these deals happen in the past, and what you have to be careful of is, they'll run that line to you, and they will convey that line to you, which means that half mile you now own.
Okay.
You have to be careful of that. Because 10, 20 years from now, when the poles are all rotted, the wires drooping and causing fires and burning out this precious grass and everything, you know, who owns that pipe? Or that, not the pipeline, but the...
The electric line.
Electricity.
Okay.
So, you know... You
that is something that. To look at that we hadn't thought of yet.
That's definitely something, because there is upkeep and maintenance on those lines.
From what I understand, it's still the power company that's owning them, but that is something that I will look into, because that is...
And once again, talking about contracts, which he doesn't like to talk about, if you don't...
Hey, I do contracts all the time.
If you don't run that well for so long, is they going to shut your electricity off, renegotiate the rates, whatever? Contracts are what keep the world on an even keel.
Yeah.
And people, they're in a hurry to get the electricity, to get that well going, to get the corn watered. So they'll sign anything. Read the contracts.
Yeah. I know they want these lines to pay for themselves in an average of 3 years.
So would you use that much electricity in 3 years?
I think we would.
Okay. There you go.
I think we would, but I mean, it's still good to look at what you're saying. Who owns the line after they build it?
Don't y'all have a cousin that's like a lawyer?
We do.
Don't y'all like run some stuff by him occasionally?
Look over I know on the last one we did, there was no contract signed.
They just did it.
Bleep that out. The power company just did the line. There was no line. Actually, there was no line involved on that one. It was just they set a pole. They paid for the transformers. And so that may have been a low-cost enough deal. They just did it.
Right.
On these deals, it's enough more of a deal. They may ask us to sign a contract. I don't know.
No.
We hadn't got that far into the deal yet, but that'll be something I look at if we do sign a contract.
So what would be your upsides to a contract?
Well, if especially if they own the line, that would be an upside. They own the transformers. That would be an upside. And they supply us electricity. I mean, that's...
What would the downside be?
They own the transformers. They're supplying the electricity.
I mean, there is a downside to them owning the transformers, although it's cheaper for them to own the transformers, in my experience. But if they run out of transformers, that would become a problem.
I'm just saying, y'all are really fortunate because we have a common friend that put his well on electricity, and like every time lightning struck, it struck his well, and he replaced like four of those electric gearheads in like 4 years.
I've done one, but I've also done a place where I own the transformers, and in 3 years,
talking about it blew up the gearhead.
Oh, it blew up the
transformer. Like he replaced.
No, I've replaced a gearhead.
Oh, okay.
In 3 years. Because I've had it on electricity in 3 years. I've replaced the gearhead, which it was a used gearhead. You know, it was used when I bought it. But then I've got another place where the electricity isn't supplying the wells, but it's supplying the pivot and a booster.
Yeah.
That I have replaced the transformers for about or more money than that one gearhead. 100 horse gearhead.
Right.
For more money than what the gearhead costs. And in four years, I've replaced it three times, I think. The transformers. Because every time lightning hits, I have to replace those transformers.
Well.
So those are...
Maybe you ought to insure that son of a bitch.
So you're saying going green costs money?
Oh, yeah.
And that's what O'Neill Farms is all about, going green.
Something like that.
They're on a trial basis with those electric combines,
so
I'm pretty sure.
So let's talk about that. So why are you switching to electric?
Because it's less maintenance overall is one main reason. And right now it is cheaper. Somehow, for the electric company to burn natural gas than it is for us to burn natural gas.
Mm-hmm. So, you give all your control to your operation to one company with a contract, which we're not discussing right now. And what if they rock through here next year and say, okay, we're going to double your electric cost?
We can always go back.
No, you have a contract saying you will specify that you...
Well, he's not signing contracts at this point, though.
Oh, we're not signing
contracts. We actually have no contracts in place. Mm-hmm. So, assuming there are no contracts in place, we can swap back for a negligible fee, I would say.
Pretty much. Might buy a few, yeah.
I mean, we're going to have the motors. We're going to have some gearheads. Because we're not going to sell all our gearheads.
I did the math. Whenever I worked for y'all, y'all spent a minimum of $1,920 a year for me spending every Monday morning changing oil.
Okay.
Dang, how much was you paying him?
Well, it was
one day. I thought it was fair.
It was one day a week. And it took me from, let's say, 7:30 to noon, sometimes 1, 2 o'clock, depending on what else was going on.
Well, and that was typically two of us doing it. So
I don't think you were getting paid that time. Yeah, you were getting paid. Your granny's paying you. So double that. That's $4,000 a year on two guys running around changing oil.
And that's only oil changes. That's
and
not,
we were efficient at it, too.
That's not counting general upkeep, you know, rebuilding motors.
That doesn't even include the cost of the oil.
Yeah.
So here's a scenario for you.
I was getting ready to wind down. Seems like David's getting fired up.
That is fine bourbon. So,
old granddad.
It's January. It's 4th of July.
Okay.
You're hot into the corn season, right? We're getting
knee high by the 4th of July.
Yeah, yeah. So you're irrigating this, and all of a sudden your electric wells. The electric company calls and says, hey, we're going to have to shut you off because the people in Dallas are getting hot.
We have not seen any of that yet.
Wait for it.
With our electric company.
Hey, man.
And that it helps that our electric grid is not attached.
It's not attached to theirs.
To Dallas.
But we've got all these electric cars and trucks and Yellowbird school buses, you know. Come on.
Hey, man. In 1 week, I'll help him out with this. In 1 week, we will ruin that corn crop and we'll have everything back on gas.
You're probably right.
There you go.
But it is something to think about. But right now, I mean, gas prices this summer, gas prices were so high, it's pushing us to electricity. And I'm not doing it to go green. That is not my worry. It
green
is the price of
every
things.
Day O'Neill Farms.
Because my idea is everybody that's driving an electric car, I mean, that's good for them. All they're doing is they're moving the smog that they produce. They're moving their carbon footprint. They're still producing the same amount of smog.
They are moving it, though.
But they're moving it to the electric plant. They're taking it off the highway or the city that they drive in regularly. And they're moving it outside of town or to wherever their plant is.
You know what else they're doing? They're labeling themselves as pansies. Aren't they?
I'm not going to comment on that. Maybe a little bit.
I said it, Sean. You're a pansy.
Don't get me wrong. Changes have to be made to protect this world of ours. That's what we do in agriculture. But do we have to make the changes overnight?
No. No, we don't.
Okay.
And I would agree with you on that,
and
David.
Whenever we make said changes, are we totally committed? We don't ever look back to the old ways?
No.
Okay.
We certainly aren't digging up gas lines.
Well, I'm not.
I do it all the time.
Well, yeah, but you fix them. Put them back in the ground.
I mean, we are not taking that when we put in electricity, we are not taking out gas lines.
Well, it's just like I was on Aunt Ruth's the other day. You look out, there's still the little house canopy that goes over the gas or the well.
So, no, the meter is still there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. 6 months, year later, are you still going to be able to get gas?
I don't know how X company works.
I don't either, but I would think so.
Given to understand dangerously, but I don't know about their contractual obligations.
Think.
I mean, we are. I know.
I'm real sure that they're not going to be real quick to turn your shit back on. Like, in a week, yeah, we might have O'Neill Farms ready to go back, but I don't know if the gas is going to be there.
Are they still going to have the gas?
I don't know what else they would do with it. I'm just hoping the gas gets more reliable at my house.
You live in a city, correct? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they just spent a whole lot of money on a neighbor's place to rebuild that.
But I did get some air bubbles in my gas last year.
Imagine that. I don't know, guys. I don't know what the answer to all this is. We need to
move a little closer.
He says, we got to make changes.
I think the natural gas sector is probably about as clean an energy as you can get.
I was going to say the same thing. Natural gas is clean. It's a good, clean burning energy.
It paid my bills for a lot of years, but I do unpartially say that I think natural gas is about as clean as you can get.
It is the cleanest.
I've burned a lot of natural gas.
And, you know, it's funny. At one point, probably, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, they were talking about using natural gas in cars instead of going to electric. And I don't know whatever happened to that. Do you know? Do you ever hear anything on that? Is that just impractical or?
The demand, I would say, was probably there. The supply, because you couldn't just get liquefied natural gas anywhere.
Right.
Company I work for is very high. We are the largest producer of liquefied natural gas, but we ship it everywhere else. So when the demand gets there, we will meet the supply.
So we're ready to go on trivia.
I think we are.
Okay, David, you're in the hot seat.
I'm not.
I hope you brought a trivia question. I'm asking you, you're asking Royce. So
I was going to ask the two of you collectively, but
that's fine. We work as a team.
Go ahead.
So, David, what dairy cow produces the highest milk fat in their milk?
Jerseys.
I thought he'd think about that a little bit more. Okay, your turn. Ask Royce.
Agriculture?
It can be anything.
You're asking Royce, so I really don't care. Stump his ass. Crack an egg. Bet you can't.
What year was the cotton gin developed, invented?
It was Eli Whitney, and it was in 18... I know it was in the 1800s. It was 1884?
Beats the hell out of me. I
just got through. I think it's 1813.
Could, it probably
pretty
was.
Sure it's 1813 with big grin. Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin.
I think you're right. Yeah, because it was.
I'm gonna double check that.
Because that's what made the plantations blow up so big. Because they didn't have to have so much help gin in their cotton.
So,
oh, we were wrong. 1794.
Damn, it was way before either of us thought.
I remember that like yesterday.
Broke us both. Well, in 1794, he was issued a patent for the cotton gin.
That's when it happened then. Okay, Royce, ask him a question.
All right. Now, this is between the two of you. Y'all can both take part in this one. Name four of... Yeah, I know. I kind of said that wrong. Name four of the eight biggest ranches in the U.S.
You got King.
All right.
You got one in Hawaii.
That is a big one, but I don't know the name.
I need names.
I don't know the one in Hawaii.
We got two of them.
Oh, wait, are we talking
in the state?
State of Texas?
The shit down there by Wichita Falls, the Wagner.
Yep.
The King.
The King that. And the, yeah, the
we
Wagner.
Got, we got two now. You're really pulling your weight over there, Pop.
I don't think the Sixes falls into play there.
I don't think so.
It is not on this list.
If you'd gone in Texas, we could knock this one out of the park.
No, U.S.
Wait, are we Texas or U.S.? Y'all are confusing me.
I said U.S.
He said in U.S., but two were in Texas.
U.S.
And I knew the two in Texas.
Okay, there's one in Hawaii and one in Florida.
I don't have any idea about the one in Florida. He's old. You got to give him points for that.
The one in Florida, I would have thought would have made it, but it's...
Pardon us, folks, while these guys look at their phones.
Well, I'm not looking at shit on my phone.
So King is number one. Wagner is number seven.
Oh, shit. The Yellowstone? The Monte Verde.
The Monte Verde. No, sir.
The Mesa Vista?
Nope.
The Spade?
Nope.
Are you going to tell us?
All right, we got the King Ranch, the Singleton Ranches, the Diamond A Ranch, the Babbitt Ranches, the Briscoe Ranches, the Viermo, which is a Ted Turner ranch, the Wagner Ranch, and the O'Connor Family Ranches.
Well, there you go. We,
well, so damn, we lost that there. One.
I don't know any of them people.
Well, you know, we know two of them.
I don't know any of them. We know who they
where
are.
Where they are.
We can buy their pickup for one of them.
Buy from them. Kind of surprised the Sixes wasn't a little further up there than what they were, but...
If you're in Texas, it comes down to like the Spade, the Wagner, the Sixes. What's that one that's for the Turkey...
Turkey Track.
Turkey Track. The King Ranch, and what's that one down there by the King? They do a lot of hunting now. Sounds big.
The Kennedy?
Yeah, the Kennedy.
The Kennedy is a big one.
Yeah. I think that's Texas's top.
I would agree with that.
5 to 10 or however many out of 10. But, well, hey, Dad, we appreciate you being here. We had a lot of fun.
Hang on. Keep talking.
Everybody, check out our Facebook page, Effed Up Farming.
Like, share.
Send to your friends. Let them know we're here.
Anybody you think would like whiskey and or farming.
And or gas production.
Anything to do really
and
with
or
rural
generalized
America.
Generalized bullshit.
Generalized bullshit.
So, top five farms with the largest acreage in the United States is what? Go, Royce.
Top five farms?
Yep.
Mormon Church?
Yep.
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
I don't think you're looking at a good list.
Bill Gates?
No, he's just one of the largest landowners. I don't think it's all farmland.
It depends on how you count this one. That's also with the...
well, the Mormon Church owns more farmland than anybody else.
So. No, I think Bill Gates passed him. Or is he just the single largest landowner?
I think he's the single largest landowner.
I'm talking family farms.
Oh, fuck.
That one, I don't know. The King Ranch.
Farms.
They farm.
But they do farm.
They farm like a son of a bitch.
Hell, they own their own gin.
USA.
They're in the USA.
Okay. Stuart and Linda Resnick. 190,000 farm acres.
I feel like he's just trying to one-up me here.
Offutt family, 190,000.
Hey, I know the Offutts.
FanJul family.
Peanut people.
Not peanut, potato people. 2,000 farm acres. Boswell Family Acres, 150,000 acres. And the Simplot Family, 82,500 farmland acres.
Hey, we know somebody that used to know them.
I've met Scott Simplot. They own a lot more than that. That's not including their ranch land.
All right, David, you got any random thoughts for us?
No.
Any bits of wisdom? Lean into the mic there.
Two. Do a one call before you dig. And buy cheap and sell high.
All right.
There you go. Once again, check out all our sponsors. If you're looking for a really good Angus bull with a very gentle demeanor, dude's going to throw jackrabbits. His name's Reggie. He's looking for somebody to love. Hit us up, 806-440.
You son of a bitch.
I'll bleep that part out. Anyway, hit us up on Facebook. Let us know if you're looking for an Angus bull. And David, again, we really appreciate you being here.
Yep. Thank you, sir.
It's truly an honor and a privilege.
That's what we thought. Next time you're here, because you already made the comment that you're Scotch, we'll drink Scotch.
Yeah. Bring us a bottle.
I'll bring it. It's fine. We'll let him drink it. Anyway, see you, love you, bye.
Adios, people.